Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, the football season is nigh. The Lions open preseason action with a game on Friday against the New York Giants at Ford Field. We've haven't been around for a good month, so we got plenty to talk about.
We've been just busy, I guess, right?
Well,
The
yeah.
tough matching schedules up. Been the job has been pretty consuming, and
Hardest working man in Lions media coverage.
well, we're doing a lot. We're doing a lot at Pride of Detroit. So it's been keeping me busy, and then birthdays for the kids and school getting ready. It all adds up. And so schedules have been a little tight. Glad that we finally get to touch base again, buddy.
Yeah, no, it's great to hear from you. So let's dig right in. You're going to give some of your observations that you've seen in practices against the Giants. We're going to go position by position, like how we usually do. We're not going to preview the Giants game because it's really not important since it's the preseason. We'll be doing that when we get to regular season action. We will start with the quarterbacks. The quarterback room has changed since we last talked, and it has actually changed a lot in the last 24 hours. Jared Goff is still the number one. Nate Sudfeld is still the backup, but we've got a new number two quarterback in Teddy Bridgewater.
So Bridgewater isn't technically signed at this moment, but it's going to happen. Dan Campbell has said as much, and he'll be in the building and attending different meetings and whatnot with the Lions this week. And then they're expecting him to get on the field and acclimating in week two of the preseason. So don't expect to see or hear a ton about him other than like a couple of fun stories about why the Lions are signing him. But I think his presence alone and based on how Dan Campbell talks about him, I think it's a pretty safe assumption that he's going to be the number two. Sudfeld hasn't looked bad, but the love that Dan Campbell has for Teddy Bridgewater, I think, is going to supersede anything that Nate Sudfeld can do.
Well, Sudfeld will have his opportunity on Friday. It's safe to assume that Teddy Bridgewater won't play a single snap against the Giants, and it's quite likely Goff won't either.
The joint practices are basically geared to so that you can maximize what you get out of your starters. The game is then going to be focused more on the reserves. And with Bridgewater not being here yet, he's not going to play. Goff probably, I'm almost certain he's not going to play in the preseason, or at least the
So
first
all
game, right?
preseason, he's
Well,
not going to get a series or two in there.
we'll see come like game three, right? Like game three, he might get some work, but like you have joint practices with the Giants. I'd be surprised if he played. If he did, it would be one series. And then the same thing happens next week with the Jaguars. He's going to get a ton of like situational work. See, like the joint practices are designed to get everything you want exposure wise out of your starting unit. You get the matchups you want, the situations you want, and so when you by the time you get to the game, you don't really need to risk injury because you've already run this guy through, or all your starters through 2 days worth of intense workouts and stuff and competition. So yeah, typically I'm expecting the starters to get a lot of breaks in the first two games of the preseason. I do expect them to play in game three a little bit, but again, not that much. So but as far as the Giants game, yeah, I'm not expecting Jared Goff to play. I'm not expecting Bridgewater's not going to play. So it's going to be Nate Sudfeld for probably the first half. And that should be entertaining because Nate's going to be playing for his job. And then it'll probably be Adrian Martinez doing the second half. And there's a big difference between those two players right now. Sudfeld looks sharper, but Sudfeld also has some patterns, I think, that he's falling he is susceptible to. And some of these patterns of just, leaning on one guy, like he doesn't just throw like this is my number one and I'm gonna throw to my number one. His pattern is more like this. I found Dylan Drummond on my first throw. So I'm going to come right back to Dylan Drummond on throw two. Maybe I'll go away from him on three, but then I'm going to go right back to him on throw four again. Like, so he's like, he really sticks to his targets, and he's done that once the pads have come on. And I mean, if I'm noticing it, I'm sure the Lions defense is noticing it as well, because the last time he got in like a game situation on against the Lions defense on Saturday, they had like three picks on him. So I'm wondering if that's kind of his Achilles heel. He just becomes too reliant on like a certain guy. And if it is, that could be, you know, that could be a problem. And we'll see it in, you know, we'll see it unfold on Friday against the Giants, because I'm sure he's going to get a long run.
So what do you think his odds are of making the roster now?
It's real tricky, right? Because like, I could absolutely see them keep three quarterbacks. At the same time, I don't know if it's a proper use of your resources, right? A lot of it really depends on how quick Bridgewater can get up to speed on the playbook. Like, it's very possible they could keep three and then just keep that one quarterback spot, like that third quarterback spot available. And then when JMO returns, then you cut Sudfeld as the counter move, right? And then you've given Bridgewater 2.5 months to kind of acclimate to the playbook, and you get he should be a lot further along in his development or his acclimation. And so I don't know. I kind of think they might keep three right off the bat, but I think if they do need to turn to a number two, my guess is it's going to be Bridgewater.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so you made an interesting statement in there.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about Jameson Williams. He's going to miss the first six games of the regular season due to the gambling. So, and you're saying that could potentially be time for them to use to get Bridgewater up to speed. But if Jared Goff got hurt in week one or week two, mm-hmm. you're not going to put Nate Sudfeld in there. It's going to be Teddy Bridgewater under center. This is the reason why they brought him in, to get a veteran quarterback with a bunch of starts under his belt to keep the team afloat. If mm-hmm. Goff gets hurt, I, you know, like you and I have had concerns that, you know, will Nate Sudfeld be able to keep the team afloat mm-hmm. If there was an injury to Goff?
No, I hear you. I absolutely do. And I agree with you that I do think they would want to turn to Teddy, but they also aren't going to want to go in with a 10% of their playbook, right? If he's only, it depends on how fast he acclimates, right? If he doesn't acclimate, they may turn, and Jared Goff goes down in week one, they may turn in Nate Sudfeld in week two, and then just really work on getting, it's hard to tell right now. Like, we'll have to see how Teddy throws. We'll have to see how Teddy acclimates. We'll have to talk to him. We'll have to talk to the, you know, coaches, and we'll have to see where he's at. But right now, you know, they've got 4 weeks to kind of figure this out, and before the regular season, less than 4 weeks to make a decision.
All right. So there's probably the handful of people at least yelling at their devices or their Walkmans or Discmans or whatever they're listening to us on that we haven't mentioned Hendon Hooker at all. And that's because Hendon Hooker is not going to be available for most of the season in all likelihood.
Yeah. I think this signing of Bridgewater is a pretty clear indicator that they are willing to just sit on Hendon and just let him start the season on NFI and then just kind of wait and see. If injuries happen, maybe the timetable gets altered on when they decide they want to use him, or maybe he redshirts the whole year and they're comfortable with that. It's hard to tell. Hendon is in every meeting, so he's learning that way. He's doing the coaching staff is scripting plays for him to run after practice and then giving it to the training staff, and then the training staff is running him through those plays, because being on the NFI, he's not allowed to practice with coaches. That's against NFL rules, but he can practice with the training staff as they're evaluated. And so he's getting work in, he's getting specific work in that the coaches want him to get. They just can't give him, you know, tips or anything on the fly when he's working out. They have to basically just look at him on tape and, you know, give him and keep him in contact with the film room. So it's just kind of like you have to work around the system. but I think they're going to take it slow with him.
All right. Moving over to the running back position, it would seem for certain it's going to be David Montgomery, Jahmyr Gibbs, Jason Kabinda, and Justin Jackson because of the return abilities. Those seem to be the four guys that so far would have lockdown spots. Would you agree?
Yeah, I'm with you. Jackson is really one of their key catalysts on special teams. He's a guy who does coverage good, very well. He plays returner. He can block on punt. He can do all four phases at a high level, and he has very capable running back experience on offense as well. And so, I do think he's locked in to the roster. Whether he's RB3 or RB4, I think that'll be determined in like the pecking order. But I think he's making the roster. The question really becomes then, do they keep a fourth running back? And maybe that running back ends up being RB3, like the third choice. If they do, they've really been leaning towards Craig Reynolds pretty heavily. It's not even really been that close between Reynolds and Jermar of the pecking order. But I think Jermar's really made big strides on special teams, and he's earned enough to like get a look in the preseason, where if he plays well in the preseason, he's really going to kick himself into the mix again. But if I had to guess, I would say it's Reynolds based on usage, because they are almost always going to him in that as that third running back in the pecking order. Muhammad Ibrahim, he's learning. Like, he's just not there. He's not there yet, right? Like, you've got some talented players that are competing for tough spots, and Ibrahim just isn't there. He's just not yet.
Practice squad player, or they let him go?
No, I think he's a stash and develop guy. Because you can see splashes of it. You can see the jumps sets. You can see him picking holes. You can see him being physical, but the technique's not quite there at the NFL level. He's rotating and repping very late in the rotation, and he'll get a run, in the preseason. And look, if he's the fourth running back to get touches in the preseason, or the third running back to get touches in the preseason, he's going to be going up against guys that maybe aren't as good as him, and he should look good. So if he looks good on tape, could get him more opportunities. But right now, he looks like he's a stash and develop guy.
All right, so we don't want to blow through these two guys, but this is kind of what this show is about, is to talk about, you know, rounding out the roster. But Gibbs, everything we're reading about him or seeing about, he's fantastic. You know, you have to keep your feet moving, as you would say, Eric, if you're trying to defend him. So he's looked like the real deal so far. What about Montgomery? Do you have any comments on those two?
Yeah, Montgomery's just smart about his approach. He has little wasted movement, right? Like, he's see the hole, hit the hole, and then he's such a bowling ball. He's hard to get a good angle on, right? So a lot of times defensive backs will come up and try and tackle him, and if they don't quite take the right angle, arm tackles don't work with him, and so. He understands the blocking scheme real well. You're starting to see him progress more as camp goes on. But I think as the offensive line like is able to like fire off and like get their run scheme going, he's going to look a lot better. Gibbs is electric, but he dances a little too much for me sometimes. And I think a little bit too much for coaches. You want them to be a little bit more precise, but like, you can see them introducing more run zone, outside zone concepts, because that's what he had success with at Alabama. And so you're starting to see that, Gibbs involved in the passing game a ton. But yes, I mean, some of the highlights from the Giants practices, you can see when he wants to set up a linebacker, he's very, very challenging to try and cover.
All right. Any notes on Kabinda? We always blow through Jason Kabinda, like every episode we do.
Yeah, not really. He's one of their better special teamers, and so that's going to go a long way.
Solid.
Yeah, I do wonder if the roster's getting deep enough to the point where it could start choking out some of those specialty type roles. And maybe Cabindas is one that, you know, might be on the bubble, but I think he's still in at this point. He did catch one touchdown pass in practice. And I mean, as soon as it happened, I turned to Jeremy and said, well, that's the one catch we're going to see from him this year. Right. Cause they never show it in the game pretty much after that. So I'd like to see his usage go up. I just don't know if it is. And I haven't seen anything that tells me it's going to either.
All right, flipping over to the wide receiver group, which has actually changed quite a bit since we last talked. Sadly, Tom Kennedy waived with an injury settlement, but as we always, we'll see him again because they can bring him back. They can bring him back later this year.
So Tom goes up with Jack Campbell for a ball and ends up underneath Campbell as the two come to the ground. He hurts his shoulder. He's got it in a sling. They cut him. He passes through waivers, reverts back to IR. Then they eventually come to an injury settlement with him, and they release him again. The injury settlement, the fact that he got one, is an indicator that they probably think, or maybe Tom's camp thinks, that he can play again this season. At this point, like, if he is able to come back, you could see a similar situation like with CJ Moore last year, where he sits out the allotted time that is per the injury resettlement. Like, if they say it's going to take him 8 weeks for his shoulder to heal up, then they pay him for 8 weeks. He can't sign with another team. After those 8 weeks are up, he's eligible to sign with another team, but he can't return to Detroit for another 3 weeks after that. And then, so he may end up in Detroit again, just depending on how long the injury settlement is, if he's going to, how healthy and quickly he can get healthy. And, you know, if someone else doesn't pick him up, but like you said, very possible we see another CJ Moore type scenario here.
Right. And, you know, we just bring him up first because this is his time of year. So he loses his time of year. He probably shouldn't have been the first guy we brought up, but that is, you know, he would have been seen on the edge of being wide receiver six if they keep six wide receivers. We don't know if it'll be five or six. Jameson Williams, we already mentioned him. He's going to be, you know, suspended for 6 weeks, so it's now pretty wide open. They've added a new wide receiver, Denzel Mims. That happened a few weeks ago, but we haven't talked about it yet. And how would he fit in? Is he going to be, you know, in the lineup now? This his path to the roster more clear?
I do think it's clearer, right? So just to kind of like overview, kind of like how we did with the running backs.
Yeah, let's clear that up.
Jameson is going to be on the roster once he's cleared from suspension, but until that time, you're going to have Amon-Ra, Josh Reynolds, Khalif Raymond, and Marvin Jones. Those four guys are locked in. I think we're all pretty confident with that. So there's going to be at least a wide receiver five and maybe a wide receiver six. And at times it looked like seventh rounder Antoine Green was going to be that guy. And then he kind of fell off a bit. Then Mims has kind of came in and he looked like he was slowly coming around, but then he gets hurt. And so now, and he's currently hurt. And so, that's created other opportunities. Then, like we said with Tom Kennedy, he exits, Trinity Benson steps up. Then Trinity Benson gets hurt, and now he's on the shelf. And so, and then with Green regressing, like, so you've got like this handful of guys between Benson, Green, Mims, and the undrafted kid out of Eastern Michigan, Dylan Drummond.
Yeah, I was going to ask about it because you didn't bring him up yet.
We're going to get there. So you got these like four or five guys that are competing for one, maybe two spots. And I do think right now Mims looks like he'll be in. He kind of looks like the last guy to get in. But after that, with Benson being hurt, with Tom Kennedy no longer here, with Green not flashing as much as he did in that first week of camp, like Green flashed in the first week of camp to the point that he was getting like some first team looks. And then it was just too much for him. He started making mistakes. Then he got yanked off the field. He was back with the third team, and he really hasn't been able to get off that third team since. So he kind of got stalled in his development, and they had to reset him. And he's slowly working his way up. And in the meantime, Drummond, he has slowly worked his way up, and he's gotten a lot of opportunities with the twos, and he's made the most of them. Now, I wonder if like they did Green a disservice by elevating him so quickly and then having to back it off. Whereas Drummond, they were spent slowly just adding a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. It's hard to tell, but at this time, Drummond looks like he's a guy who's playing at a more consistent level. So I'm not counting Green out because I think he's the talented player. Obviously, they do too since they drafted him. But if I had to add like a pecking order for like those last couple of spots, I would say Mims is probably solidly in there as wide receiver 5. And then Green and Drummond are probably fighting it out for a potential last spot if they decide to keep a 6 receiver.
So regardless, it looks like Green and Drummond, if they don't, either of them doesn't make the 53-man roster, we'll probably see them hanging around on the practice squad. Maybe they try to continue to develop them. Obviously, they have a little more invested in Green as a draft pick, but Dillinger, right. you know, everybody loves the local story.
Sure, and he's playing good. He's really playing well. He started playing well, and then he stacked like 2 days, and then I wrote a little like blurb on him, and then he stacked a third day, and then a fourth, and a fifth, and all of a sudden it's like, holy cow, he's got half the days in camp, and he's showing up on half of them. So like, that's notable. Like he's just day after day after day playing well, and so there's not, outside of Amon-Ra, and maybe, you know, I think Reynolds and Raymond, we kind of know what they are, but like outside of Amon-Ra, he's been one of the more consistent players. I mean, Amon-Ra, he looks like he looks so much better. It's crazy because he's always been really good, but like,
always
it's
been good.
It's always, he is so hard to cover, and he's so sure-handed, and he's so confident. It's, I'm going to be stunned. Like the offense should move through Amon-Ra. If the offense doesn't move through Amon-Ra, and I know they're going to want to run the ball, but if you aren't getting like offensive production by moving the ball through Amon-Ra, then I don't know what they're going to be doing, because like he is night and day the best receiver on this roster. Like it's not even close right now.
Well, he is a star, and that's just what the Lions have needed for, you know, decades. And the Lions have had stars. You know, they've had big stars in Calvin Johnson, who was the second overall pick, and Ndamukong Suh, second overall pick, Matthew Stafford, first overall pick. But here, finally, you know, they went out, they got a guy in the fourth round, he's developing into a star. And this is what good teams do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so this is, you know, this is not a harbinger of doom, but this you know, this is good. Like, hopefully there's a couple more of these guys on this roster. We'll get around. We're still working our way through it. We'll get to that. Yep. So Chase Kota, Trey Quinn, Maurice Alexander, Avery Davis, they're just camp fodder, you would think, at this point.
I think like Kota and Quinn, maybe you see them stick around on the practice squad. Alexander's got some appeal as a kick returner, so it's possible a team tries to, you know, pry him away. I don't know if he'd necessarily get claimed if he was released, but and Avery Davis, I haven't really seen much of. So, you know, Kota flashes, Quinn flashes, Alexander, like that special teams experience will carry him. But I don't think those three guys are in the competition with the other ones at this time.
All right. The tight end group, which has pretty much become crystal clear at this point with the really unfortunate injury to Shane Zylstra. Mm-hmm. And that puts him out for the season, leaves the team with Laporta, Brock Wright, James Mitchell. Those are the three guys who are definitely making the roster. They have Daryl Daniels and Daniel Helm in camp. Do either of those guys stand a chance of making the team?
I think Daniels has a chance because he's been with Steve Heim, the tight ends coach, for a few years. He even started a few games for him. But I don't think he's going to jump Mitchell. So it would take like them keeping 4 tight ends, and I don't necessarily think that they're ready to do that. I think, like you said, it's kind of crystallized with the injury to Zylstra, because I think he was a real competitor for that, a real, you know, like he was really in that competition, but he's probably going to miss the year from what we're gathering. They're saying like 6 months. So like, that means puts him in, you know, January, February range. And that's it.
Super Bowl.
Yeah. He can come back for the Super Bowl. Yeah. So I don't expect Zylstra to get like an injury settlement, because like if his prognosis is he's going to miss 6 months, well, that's the entire season. And so he's just going to make his whole paycheck. You know what I mean? So like, I think that he's going to be on their IR. The Zylstra camp isn't going to be in any hurry to try and cut a deal, because he's going to get paid. And if they keep him through February, they retain his rights. And so he's a restricted free agent next year. And, you know, maybe that's something that interests them as well. And so I expect him to stay on the IR for the season.
All right. What kind of development have you seen out of James Mitchell? Has there been a big change from year one to year two?
Yeah, I think he looks more polished. The coaches say like the stuff that they're teaching him, he's putting into practice, right? I don't know if I'm necessarily ready to say he's going to jump Brock Wright, because Brock Wright is a guy that they trust and they know is going to do exactly what they ask of him. And I think Mitchell's earning that trust right now. So it's possible Mitchell jumps him down the road, but definitely not early. And I know Brock Wright he's going to get a lot of run, because the Lions are going to run.
I bet.
Well, yeah, he'll probably be a technical starter, right? Because they like to give veterans the tech, right? But I don't think he'll outsnap LaPorta. LaPorta might be the second best pass catcher on the roster, like outside of St. Brown. Like he can take games over if they decide to lean into him a little bit more. And, you know, this is, if JMO's not in the conversation, because of a suspension, and
great hands anyways.
Well, we didn't really talk a whole bunch about that.
We won't get into that. Campbell's comments.
But LaPorta, I mean, he's got terrific balance. He can have balance through contact. He can catch the ball off frame. He can catch the ball with this wide catching radius. He's very sure handed, very confident. When he catches the ball, he doesn't go down. He then turns it up and gets even more yak. And I mean, it's a highly productive security blanket that could have some pretty sensational games if they decide to lean on him. And I think he's going to get the majority of the reps at tight end.
All right, let's move on to the heart and soul of this team, the offensive line. The start, well, we have six guys for five spots, but
yeah,
it seems that the starters will be Taylor Decker, Jonah Jackson, Frank Ragnow, Hal Vitae, and Penei Sewell. Obviously four of those guys are set in stone. There seems to be a competition between Vitae and Graham Glasgow, and Glasgow's going to be a sixth guy who makes the team. They'll keep nine on the 53 man, right? But play eight in a regular
probably
season game.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. So like if you have eight offensive linemen active for a game, you get afforded a roster bonus where you can keep more players active. So almost every team in the NFL keeps their eight players so that it affords them an extra two spots on the game day roster. So they're going to keep eight. And if they're worried about one getting hurt, which typically they have that safety, they would keep nine offensive linemen. Possible they keep 10. I'm kind of leaning nine. That was more of their focus last year. And I do agree that with the six that you identified, they're being very cautious with Vitae right now. He re-injured his back, but in a different way. Like his back initially was, you know, like a pulled disc. And then he he got a back injury, but it wasn't like the disc. It was like a impact injury. So like it was his back that was hurt, but a different kind of injury, back injury. So he was able to recover from that, but like they're still being very gentle with him in his reintroduction. And so because of that, we've seen a lot of Graham Glasgow at guard. And Graham is also going to be the guy that they want to be the backup center. And so they've been cross training him at center a lot as well. Frank Ragnow, him and his wife are welcoming their child. That's what we've been told, you know, behind the scenes, like the, that's kind of what we're expecting is happening, right? That's what we think is happening. And so Graham's getting reps at center against the Giants. And so that means more play for Vitae. That means more play for the backup right guards as well. But those six are kind of locked in. They like Colby Soersdal a lot, and they're getting him reps higher and higher all the time, with kind of Graham and Vitae splitting reps at right guard, or Graham getting a lot more and them resting Vitae. Soersdal's getting a ton of run with the second team at right guard, and that's huge. I think that is going to give him an edge, and that probably makes him offensive lineman number seven. And then after that, they're going to need a tackle, and then then they're going to need a ninth one. And so if that tackle spot is between Matt Nelson, Jermaine Ifedi, and Obinna Eze, those are the three guys that are really in the mix. The other guys are not at this time. Matt Nelson seems to be the preferred option. When Penei Sewell was out for a day, it was Nelson who was starting in his spot at right tackle. Ifedi has kind of slipped a little bit down the depth chart because Eze has been playing better, and they've been using Eze as kind of the second team left tackle. So I think Eze is rising. I think Ifedi is behind, maybe sliding a tick, and Matt Nelson isn't overly impressing, but one of them is going to make it. We just don't know which one, right? My gut is it's Nelson, but it wouldn't surprise me if Eze's taken enough steps that maybe he, finds a way to beat him out.
As we talked about through the end of last season, you know, Matt Nelson really wasn't impressive, as we got later into the year last year. One time, you know, we loved the idea of Matt Nelson's sixth offensive lineman they threw out onto the field, lined up in that tight end position or that second outside tackle position. We even postulated at the end of last season that he's not coming back. They're going to get somebody else. But here's a guy who's not going away. And it's interesting looking at this roster, because last season, when you look at the depth chart, Obinna Eze was at the bottom of it. From the beginning to the end. But the interesting thing was they kept him for the entire year. And, you know, we saw from Hard Knocks, you know, he's a young guy who didn't have the game mastered for sure. But it is interesting that they invested in him and he seems to be coming along.
Yeah, and look, he could very well use another year. Like it might be at that point where they just don't fully trust him. And they're like, hey, let's try and get another year out of him. And maybe they lean towards Nelson because he has more experience, but I think Eze is the more talented tackle and he's going to have a higher ceiling than Matt Nelson. I kind of feel like Matt Nelson is there. I think he's at his ceiling and we kind of know what he is. Yeah.
Yep. So the rest of the group, Connor Galvin, Max Percher, Darren Paolo, Logan's end of the line for Logan Stenberg. This is it.
I think so.
Ross Pierschbacher, Brad Cecil, you mentioned Jermaine Ifedi, Bobby Hart, who's recently signed, Ryan Swoboda. I'm guessing we'll see Pierschbacher and Darren Paolo here and there during the season as injuries mount. They'll pop up on the practice squad or potentially even the 53-man roster.
And you buried the you slid right past the Coyote.
Forget we didn't even mention him.
Yeah.
Now is he a guy like? Because once this was a guy who was going between maybe 53-man roster and the practice squad last year. He's also improved, put himself in the mix to make the roster.
I think between him and Pierschbacher, they're probably battling for offensive line nine. Maybe Paolo has seen some time at the twos. Pierschbacher has been with the twos when Graham isn't, the backup center. And so they've gotten some run, but I think Owashika is, I think he's just been more consistent, and they really liked his versatility to play left and right guard. And so my guess is I would give him the edge as offensive lineman 9.
Now, you know, this team will go as Jared Goff goes. If Jared Goff gets hurt, now it's a different story with Teddy Bridgewater. But if you talk to us the last 8 weeks, the last, 8 months, the last 2 years, Jared Goff gets hurt, Lions are done. Right. Mm. And that's still more or less true. I would think even if they get Teddy Bridgewater up to speed, you know, are they then a 500 team like they were last year? But this is the other position group where it immensely makes a difference, because they have 5 solid starters. Seemingly they have 6 good offensive linemen. They could handle one injury at the position. And then one could argue if they lost, well, because one of the, you may even be able to lose one of the tackles for a period of time, but if you lost 2 or 3 starting offensive line, which teams do, you know, the Lions, except for last year, they basically, you know, stuck together the whole season. You know, they had good injury luck. So, you know, as the offensive line goes, this team will go.
I think you're going to have Vitae, it looks like you're going to have Vitae. So right there, that's an automatic upgrade from what you had last year. Graham Glasgow's better than Evan Brown, and so that's an upgrade. And Colby Sorsdahl is better than anybody else that they tried out there, whether it was Owashika or Dan Skipper or Logan Stenberg. Sorsdahl's already better than all of them. So they're better depth-wise, especially on the interior. I do think the depth at offensive tackle is a bit of a red flag for me. And I'm a little bit worried about that.
It's really only at right tackle, right? Because if Decker got hurt, then Penei Sewell moves over to left tackle and play left tackle. And if Penei gets hurt, then you're looking at Matt Nelson. But some people would argue, well, why can't Vitae play right tackle and they put Glasgow at guard?
Well, that's one of the things that I've kicked around media with the other media members is, what is a better situation for this team? Is it to pull if Penei gets hurt, or if Decker gets hurt and Penei has a switch? Is it better to play Matt Nelson at right tackle or play Graham at right guard and Vitae at right tackle? Like, I don't know if you're talking just best 5, you'd put Graham and Vitae out there together. But can Vitae play tackle? Does he still have that range? I don't know.
He's getting older and he's got a bad back. And if they're not doing it in the preseason, if you're not seeing it at camp,
right?
They're likely not preparing for that. So.
Yep. Yeah. It's hard. Yeah. So it would be what gives us the best chance, but yeah, we're not seeing any of that right now. It's just me speculating.
Wild speculation. All right. Flipping over to the defensive side of the ball. We'll start in the middle. Isaiah Buggs, Aleem McNeil, Broderick Martin, the rookie, they're high on him. There's some good video of him out there. And then maybe a surprise with Levi Onwuzurike could be the 4th defensive tackle that's hanging around.
So, I think McNeil is a locked in. He's going to get the majority of the defensive tackles reps. Buggs is going to be your other starter based on him being a veteran. But I wouldn't be surprised if he and Martin split reps. Like, Martin he's a big boy. And he's got a really deceptive first step. And he's got a lot of power. Like, we watch an outside zone run where he just, like, he was running kind of laterally. And he just decided he wanted to stop running. And he just put his foot in the ground and jammed his block right into another offensive lineman and then right into the ball carrier. And everybody went down in a whole big heap just because Martin put his foot in the ground and was like, I don't want to move anymore. And so you've got lots of power out of him, big length, big body, a little raw, but he's going to be an important player. Those 3 guys lock him in. Right now, Benito Jones is playing the best of the remaining guys. But Levi is active, and they've invested in Levi, and they believe in him, and they've sweated it out with him, and they love his comeback story. I would be surprised if they went stuck with Benito over Levi and didn't give Levi a chance. And so I'm kind of leaning Levi as being the number four, but Benito is making a run for it. And he's, like I said, playing better, but they're slowly bringing Levi around and he's got another, you know, 3 weeks to, you know, elevate his game a little bit more.
All right, so we'll see a lot of Benito Jones against the Giants, I'm assuming, and Christian Covington. Those seem like two guys who are going to get extensive playing time on Friday.
Yep.
Corey Durden, Chris Smith, just camp fodder.
Yeah, I just don't think either of them are ready. We've seen like maybe a splash play from each of those guys, but and I wouldn't be surprised if you see one or two of them make the practice squad either. I just don't think they're in the mix to try and earn a spot yet.
All right, let's move out to the end positions. Now, this is a group that's, I would say, deep, but you know, a lot of people think that we can go from 39 sacks to 55 just because of the group we have here. I don't know how true that is, but on one side, you know, Aiden Hutchinson's locked in. He's the future, right? He's the guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to be seen as the defensive leader.
He's as good as St. Brown has been on offense. Hutchinson has been equally as good on defense. He has been unblockable at times. So like, okay. So he broke his leg a couple years ago when he was at Michigan. Right. And like when he rehabbed his leg, his lower body was always like thinner, right? He was always had like this kind of like slimmer lower body, but he was always like kind of this, you know, bulked up upper body. His lower body has kind of evolved to match the rest of him. And he's got these huge tree trunk thighs now, which is not something he had last year. And that power is very clear. And so you've got this like long sweeping body with like aggressive hands. And now you've got a motor underneath him that's churning. And he looks like he has made that first year to second year jump in development. Like already, like he's going to be fun. He should never leave the field. He should be out there all the time.
Well, that's great. I mean, that's something we discussed a while back that's what we were going to need to see out of him. Mm-hmm. Right. Like he was a good rookie, you know, but he did need to get stronger. He needed to get bigger and putting in the maniacal type efforts that similar to Amon-Ra St. Brown, it's only going to do him good. And, you know, that's good to hear. And I'm guessing we won't see him at all on Friday, maybe a little bit.
I'd be surprised. Yeah.
So backing him up, although I saw the other depth chart that the team put out and Romeo Quara, they had way down.
So here's what the Lions are doing with their scheme. They're running a hybrid 3 or 4 and 5 man front. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when they run their base 4, you've got Aiden on one side and Charles Harris on the other. Out of that same base 4 set, they will also utilize Pascal and Kaminsky in those two outs in a base 4 as well. If they're in more of a pass rushing situation, as opposed to like just your base, then they, instead of when they remove Aiden and Charles, they may opt to be more pass rushing oriented. And that's when they go to Romeo and James Houston. So out of their base 4, it's almost like they have like two different defensive edge groups. You've got your starters and then you've got your backup edge, like run defenders. And then you've got like your backup pass rushers. So you've got like 6 guys occupying the 2 deep, depending on what their set is going to be. Then when you add in the fact that they're going to utilize a lot of 5 man fronts, well, that's when Pascal and Kaminsky kick inside next to the interior players. And you end up with like Charles Harris and Aiden Hutchinson on the outsides, standing up as like stand up pass rushers, like almost like 3-4 scheme pass rushers with like Kaminsky, Bugs and McNeil as your down guys. Right. And so again, in that situation, when they go 5, it's possible that they remove Charles and they put James Houston up, because if they're in a very obvious pass rushing situation, because that's what James Houston's really good at. Right. But that's also what Charles Harris is good at too. So they've utilized these defensive ends in these two different fronts. And it sure looks like the top 6 guys are pretty clear And they're all kind of involved in the two deep, depending on what the situation calls for. So James Houston has been running with the threes when they just run their base sets.
It's crazy.
And Romeo has been running with the threes when they run their base sets.
Less surprising.
But that is because they kind of have like a pecking order of who they want to get reps. They want their starters in Hutchinson and Harris to get reps, but then they want to give reps to Kaminsky and Pascal because those guys are not just learning how to play the edge, but they're also learning how to play the interior spots. So they're trying to get them as many reps as they can. And so these guys are on the field usually with the second group as an effort to like increase their development. And then that leaves Romeo and James Houston with the threes. Now, James, they've been working on James's ability to drop, and it's a big work in progress. Like he's not there. He's not ready to drop into coverage consistently right now. We saw a little bit at the end of the season, and we thought like Houston would be able to do that on a more consistent basis, but it's just not there. His angles are off. His pursuit isn't great. His pass rush is great. His run, when he's going after and attacking, he's great. But when he drops, it's just he's just not comfortable right now. And until he gets comfortable doing that, he's going to be a situational pass rusher. And right now, Charles Harris can do that. Charles Harris can drop and look okay. Charles Harris can pass rush. Charles Harris can stop the run. Like Charles Harris can set the edge. And that's why Charles Harris is starting over James Houston right now, because James is still learning. You got to remember, James only had like 117 snaps last year. That's not a ton. Now, yes, he produced eight sacks. Yeah, which is huge. And that's why he's going to make the roster.
Yeah, and that's why they got to use him. I mean, he does bring a lot of value if absolutely. He can repeat that performance next season.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's not like he's not going to make the team. But his role isn't going to be more than just a situational rusher until he learns to expand his game. And look, he was a 6th-round pick. He was a guy who wasn't on the roster the first half of the year. He only played 100-plus snaps last year as it was. And yes, he was highly productive. But if you're going to play down-to-down in the NFL, you have to be able to do more than just pass rush. And right now, James isn't at that point. And so one of the questions I get asked more than anything is, why is James Houston with the threes? Well, it's because we all know what he can do as a pass rusher. They're trying to teach him how to do more so that he can be a more valuable player.
Julian Aquara, the odd man out then, or does he have a chance? Do they have a chance to keep 7?
I don't think they're going to keep 7 because I don't think they have it. I don't think they have the space. But 2, Dan Campbell was pretty frank when talking about Julian not being consistent. He said, like, he flashes and then he goes away. And he's basically said, we're telling him to do this and he's not doing it. And because of that, he's repping low on the depth chart. And he is. And they've given him some looks with the second team, and he's done a couple of things to kind of, you know, make sure you don't forget about him. But right now, he does look like he does look like the odd man out.
All right, moving over to the linebacker court. Jack Campbell, Alex Anzalone, Derek Barnes, Malcolm Rodriguez, Jalen Reeves-Maybin, maybe Anthony Pittman. You know, like they're probably keeping 5, right? They've been coy of who the starters are going to be, right? Because sometimes it's going to be Jack Campbell, or it's going to be Alex Anzalone, or Derek Barnes looks great. You know,
it's going to be okay. Look, basically what they've done for most of camp is they've used Alex at the will, and then they've used Derek at the mic. And as Derek,
a switch from last year.
They did it last year at the end of last year. If you watch some of the game, if you watch like what they did late in the year, specifically the last two games against the Bears and the Packers, and you watch how the linebackers set, you can see that when Malcolm is on the field with Alex, Alex is in the middle of the field with the mic, Malcolm's at the will. And when Barnes would come on, Barnes would play the mic and Alex would shift to the will. Barnes is a bigger body. He plays bigger, plays more physical, and Alex can do everything that he needs to do at the will that he does at the mic. Alex's flexibility to play both spots really makes Anzalone a really valuable player. So what they've done this year is they've come out and put Anzalone at the will and just kind of said, you're our starting will. And then the competition has been Barnes started out as the starting mic, and he's slowly been ceding reps to Jack Campbell as the mic. The idea in my mind is they said, look, Jack Campbell is our future. He's going to be the mic of the future. And right now, Derek Barnes is playing at a high level. So why mess around with trying to flip Alex around and stuff? And let's just keep Alex at the will and let Barnes and Campbell duke it out for who's going to be the mic. Because I don't think Malcolm is in the mix right now to challenge for a starting job. Now, he's flashed again, and he's going to be a very valuable player on offense, or on defense and special teams. But I don't think he's in the mix to start right now. It's really been the Barnes and Campbell show. And eventually, I think it's going there. Eventually, I think they're going to land on Jack Campbell. Like, he's just,
well, he's just a first round pick of him. So,
and he's bigger. He's faster. He's stronger. He's more athletic. He's got instincts. It's just, he lacks experience. And Barnes has taken a step. Don't get me wrong. Barnes looks a lot more confident and he looks a lot more natural. I just don't know if he can hold Campbell off. I think Campbell's just too good. And so I'm expecting Anzalone to play that will spot. And then the battle from Barnes and Campbell will go on through the preseason. And I think Campbell will eventually be the winner in week one.
How's Campbell at reading plays?
He's okay. I mean, like, he's a rookie, so he's getting burnt at times, right? Ironically, the guy who burns him the most is his college roommate, Sam Laporta. I mean, Laporta gets him more than anybody does. And I don't know if that's just familiarity or what, but yeah, Campbell is, like I said, he's developing. Like, here's the deal. Like, Derek Barnes has maybe looked better in coverage, but Campbell can match up with the guy and carry him like 20 yards down the field. And Derek can't do that. And like the ball that Tom Kennedy got injured on was thrown like 20 yards down the field. And Campbell was up there and almost broke up the play. And it was like Kennedy just fought through it. But Campbell, he's 6'5", 250 plus. And he's running the seam 20 yards down, hanging with like a Tom Kennedy. Like, that's, Derek can't do that. He just, there's not many guys. Right. Yeah. And he can at that size. And so that's what's going to get there. He needs more experience. And it could be like, that's one of the reasons why I think it could be a rough first year for him. But I could also see them just like saying, hey, you're the future. We're going to put you out there and you're going to gain experience one way or another.
All right. Let's move to the secondary. Starting with it gets murky with the nickel because they can play. There's a couple of guys who play both safety and corner, but we'll do our best to keep it kind of separate. Cameron Sutton, big free agent acquisition. Will Harris, who they've kept around. Chase Lucas, your favorite. Jerry Jacobs, who's, you know, you got to hand it to Jerry Jacobs for how hard he's worked going from an undrafted player to, it looks like he's going to be starting, you know, at the other cornerback position. Emmanuel Mosley, another big free agent acquisition. Starling Thomas V, who is this year's Eric Schlitt, Chase Lucas.
Right? Yeah, I got two of them right now.
Those are the six guys that are leading the way. And then Stephen Gilmore, Khalil Dorsey, and Tay Hayes, all those are the guys who are lagging behind at this point.
Yeah, so let's focus just on these outside guys first, because really what they've done, the Lions are doing, is they're incorporating their nickel with their safeties, as opposed to years past where they've incorporated their nickel with their corners. It's switching this year a little bit. So the outside guys are pretty much outside guys, and it is going to be Sutton and Jerry Jacobs that I expect to start. Mosley is back, but he had a cleanup procedure on his ACL, so we don't know how long that's going to keep him out. when he comes back, there's going to be an acclimation period, and then he will challenge Jerry for starting reps. So, you know, I think if they can get Mosley healthy, those three guys are going to be like the main guys. Now, Will Harris has been the preferred option, is kind of like outside corner three, but he's also done some backup work inside at nickel. Same thing with Chase Lucas. He's been an outside guy, but he's also done some backup stuff inside at nickel as well. And then Starling Thomas, as you mentioned, he's been outside exclusively, but he's been running with the twos. I would even argue maybe that Thomas is maybe even ahead of Will Harris in the pecking order at this point. Like, he might be CB3 until Mosley comes back. But I mean, again, they trust Will Harris so much, but you can see that Starling Thomas is a terrific player and he's going to get his shot. So they've got their kind of outside guys. And I do like those six. Gilmore is the one who I think could press for a spot and maybe could challenge like Chase. But I don't think he's there yet. He's still making some rookie mistakes, right? So, like, for example, somebody caught a pass in front of him and went to the ground, and Gilmore, instead of touching him, just kind of like saw him go to the ground and then stopped. And then the guy got up and started running, and then you could hear his teammates going, "This isn't college football anymore, rookie," right? So, like, he's still making those kinds of mistakes, but he's got real talent. And I, he's a guy I don't think they're going to be, you know, too quick to move on from. So Gilmore's a guy who I think could maybe step up in the preseason and make a run at it. But I don't think he's in that kind of top six right now. For me, Chase is the guy who's the most interesting, and I think the one that most people have like on the outside of this group. But Chase has played outside, he's played inside, he's played single high at times, he's been one of their starting gunners at times, he's been one of their starting protectors on punt return at times. Like, Chase has been repping high on special teams and all over the field on defense with the second team. And coaches love that. I mean, absolutely love that. And that's why I think he's being undersold right now, because his versatility is very Will Harris-like, and he maybe even has a little bit more range. He's just not as experienced as Will. But I like his upside better. I think he could be a better version down the road. So those are kind of like your outside guys. And I think those six are probably making the roster, and maybe Mosley stays on the pup at the beginning of the season. It's possible, right? It's very possible. And then you maybe only have five outside guys. But then on the inside at nickel, when you mix those in with the safeties, you're going to probably have like four or five of those guys that are going to stay around as well. So you're probably only going to keep like 10 players in the secondary. So five on the outside, it kind of makes some sense. And maybe you keep six on the outside and then four on the inside. We'll see how it works. But I like those six outside guys right now quite a bit.
All right. On the inside at nickel corner, free agent acquisition, CJ Gardner-Johnson and rookie Brian Branch. So total turnover at that position. Mm-hmm. Although you mentioned Will Harris is mixed a little bit in there and Chase Lucas.
Yep. Yeah, and Will was like their starter for like 10 games inside last year. So like right. He's still around, and so they still have depth. But what they've done is they've gone almost completely to a different style of nickel than what they've had in the past. And so like I said, I want to roll these nickels into the safety group, because what we've seen is Gardner-Johnson take a lot of reps at nickel. But when they want to get Brian Branch on the field, they shift Gardner-Johnson back to the safety. And then it completely changes how the safeties look. So let's talk about the safeties here too.
So Kirby Joseph, Tracy Walker. Walker's made quite a quick return from injury. Joseph is the turnover machine. They probably mm-hmm. want to keep him out on the field, although they don't face Aaron Rodgers this season. And Ife Melifonwu, would be that third safety in that group. They Savion Smith making a comeback to football, very impressive. Brady Breeze, Brandon Joseph, those are the other safeties.
So what they've done with their starters is they've rotated Kirby, Tracy, Branch, and Gardner Johnson. Those four guys, they've rotated through three spots. And what we typically see is Kirby Joseph is their kind of single high preference, and he never leaves the field. Kirby is on the field the whole time. Gardner Johnson spends a lot of time in the nickel, but when they want to put Branch on the field, Gardner Johnson shifts back to Tracy's spot. So Tracy then exits the field. Branch comes on to nickel. Gardner Johnson moves to the other safety spot. So Gardner Johnson rarely leaves the field. He's switching between safety and nickel. Branch is playing at such a high level already that they have to find ways to get him on the field. So what they've done is they're using him primarily out of the nickel, but they've also tried him as like a dime backer, like a linebacker, line him up as a linebacker, like one, like they lined him up with like one off the ball linebacker. And then Brian Branch is like the other off the ball linebacker in an effort to try and find ways to get Branch on the field. So getting Branch snaps and reps is going to be a priority because he's awesome. He is everything that we thought he would be. He is, right? So he's just been awfully impressive.
Well, it's all right. That was a question I was going to eventually lead to. Like the five rookies, you know, the five top rookies, Gibbs, Laporta, Branch, Campbell, and who am I missing? Who's the fifth guy?
Martin. Broderick Martin.
Yeah, Martin. Like, they've all looked pretty good so far, huh?
Yes, they've all been in the two deep, and three, so Laporta and Gibbs and Branch and even Martin, they've all been getting runs with the start. Actually, Campbell too. They've all been getting runs with the starters at time as well. So it's kind of crazy, but like you might end up seeing three starters this year, even though they might not technically be starters. You might be getting three guys giving you starter level reps to start the year, and by the end of the year, you might see five of them getting starter reps. All five guys drafted in the top 100, save Hendon Hooker, who we talked about is probably going to redshirt. Like, because the opportunity is there for Martin to get more reps. Branch is playing out of his mind. Laporta is playing out of his mind. Campbell's going to be a guy they want to build around, and Gibbs is an offensive weapon. Like the way that they approached and the talent that they got in the top 100 this year, it's all guys that are ready to go. Like, that's what they preached. After they drafted this class, they said, all of these guys are ready to play. And it's come true. They're all in the mix, and they're all going to give you significant snaps. Maybe none of them are technical starters. But again, you could see a game where all five of them are giving you starter-level snaps, like, well, because they're just that talented.
Mark of a good team, right? That this is kind of what we always wanted to see. Where, yeah, you could have five picks in the top 100, and they might not, they're not, none of them are starters for you because the team's pretty strong in the first place, and they're going to, you know, bolster the team's depth. They are also the team's future. Mm-hmm. This is a long time coming, and hopefully it holds up. It's concerning and Campbell's already talked about it, which is kind of a good sign, but it's also still kind of a bad sign. The hoopla over this team and the excitement that surrounds this team, you know, you know, this as well as I do. You, like, every year there's always that team that's supposed to emerge, and they usually fall flat. And sadly, the Lions are that team this year. And so hopefully we're not, you know, me and the curse, you know, hopefully they're not cursed to be in that position where, hey, this team, you know, this is the most up and coming team in the NFL. And then poof, you know, a whole bunch of stuff goes wrong, but we'll save that for another time.
I tell you, the national attention that they have gotten is legitimate. Like, NFL Network has, the Lions have had 12 practices. The NFL Network has sent a different crew three different times to Allen Park already, right? They've sent three different crews to come check out Allen Park. The Ringer spent 3 days in Allen Park. We're seeing the 33rd team. We're seeing Rick Spielman, former Vikings GM, Chris's brother.
There to see his brother.
Well, but I mean, he was out there. It's Albert Breer, Peter King, Jason Garrett, the old Dallas Cowboys coach.
Clapper.
I mean, yeah. Like these guys have all been out, and it's just consistent. Like, so I was talking to, I'll name drop here. I was talking to Charles Davis of NFL Network and he does the play by play, right?
Yeah. Is it? Yep.
And I was talking to Charles and we were talking about, you know, the hype, and he was saying that he was saying, I believe it. I think it's exactly. Warranted. Yeah. He's like, I look at this team and compared to what I've seen from this team in the past, and they look different. They act different. They look different. They carry themselves. Everything is planned and executed well. And he's like, and if it plays out like we think, he's like, I'm going to be out here a bunch. And the NFL Network's going to be out here a bunch, because like, this is the perfect story for the NFL.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, it's not just because like, it's a team that has never done it, that is doing it.
Well, that's a big chunk of it. It will become America's team in a hurry, right? Because there's no fan base is angry at the Lions. You know, right. There's no, because they've coming all off hard walked knocks. Over the Lions.
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah, we're coming off hard knocks. But what, as Charles pointed out, don't forget the Lions are hosting the draft. And if the Lions make a run at this, NFL Network is going to be all over this storyline. Look at this team. It's building. The NFL Network is going to keep hyping this team up. If you've seen advertisements for NFL Network saying like, hey, watch our training camp coverage, and then they show a drone shot of a field, that's Allen Park. They're showing Allen Park on their main commercial. And they are looking at this team. They're looking at the Lions and they're saying, man, they look real. It's a great storyline. They're headed towards the draft. If this team can win and make the playoffs, the love is not going to stop. And so the NFL is banking on them doing well. And I think there's so many people that are buying into it. Breer comes out, he writes positive things. King comes out, he writes positive things. Like, it's a team who looks like they belong, and what they've added has been legit. And they're setting themselves up to be in the right spot. And like you said, this is a roster that we've long hoped for, where they're a team that, you know, has been able to add players that don't have to immediately start. And if they do and they earn the job, then great. But like, this looks and feels very different than it's been in the past. And it's being recognized all across the NFL.
We haven't talked special teams. Jack Fox locked in at punter. They don't even have another one on the roster. Right. Scott Daly has held off. What was his name? McQuaid. I can't remember his first name. I was thinking Matt McQuaid, the former Michigan State shooting guard. All right, Jake McQuaid, who's gone, so Scott Daly's locked in as the long snapper. We still have Riley Patterson and Parker Romo just fighting it out for that kicker job, and they've been putting up similar days, day after day.
Yeah, if they kick three times, they miss once. They kick 13 times, they miss once, and both of them miss one time each day. That's pretty much been consistent. Romo has the bigger leg, but he's not as accurate. He's not as consistent with his ball placement. Patterson is more consistent, and his leg is getting bigger. He hit a 57 yarder the other day, and it was clean. So his kickoffs are better. They're more powerful. They're placed better. And when they put these guys out, Patterson seems to be the guy that's always out there first. Romo comes in second. And so, for me, that's enough for me to say, all right, I think Patterson is ahead. And maybe he won't be ahead, you know, in 3 weeks, but he's ahead now. And so that's where my vote is.
Do you see them keeping Romo on the practice squad?
I mean, if they can, because they have 16 and you never, like, you know, you always worry about having to replace a kicker if a kicker gets hurt. So a lot of teams tend to do that, and Lions are no different. So I think if they could get him to the practice squad, they absolutely would try.
It seems like an interesting prospect. Whenever there's a huge leg involved, it's like, well, maybe they should keep him around and see if he could figure things out.
Sure. Sure. Absolutely.
So we've gone through the whole roster.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how they play, because some of these guys will step up in games. But for the most part, I think things have kind of played out how we expected. And if anything, I've been a little bit more positively surprised with some players than I expected to. Branch, I knew Branch was great. I knew I'd love Branch. I did not expect Branch to be a stud like every day he comes out there, and he is. I didn't see Dylan Drummond coming, right? Like, he kind of came out. He's the darling of camp right now. I expected Amon-Ra to be better. He is. I expected Hutch to be better. He is. I expected Panay to be better. He is. Like, those, you know, those pillar guys, you expected them to play well. But for the most part, I think we've kind of gotten what we expected out of this roster. A couple of depth spots are up for grabs, and a couple of guys have kind of earned it. You know, I think once we saw Starling Thomas in the spring, we kind of knew he was going to be a stud, and he has not disappointed. So it's nice to see a couple of those UDFA guys step up, like Thomas and Drummond. And but yeah, it's a roster that is doing what we expected, and we're not seeing anybody like falling off a cliff and looking like they don't belong. And so that's a big positive. That's a big positive.
Right, so let's keep up these. They might not win Friday. I mean, nobody should get too upset if
Kind of
bad on Friday. I mean, if they get shut out and beat by 20 points, like, well, maybe be worried a little bit. But even then, it's like, well, Nate Sudfeld's not the quarterback.
You know? You're talking about depth on depth, guys, right? Like,
we're not going to learn too much on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, you might learn some about your defensive depth, but the scheme's going to be vanilla. They're not going to be like throwing anything exotic out there.
Neither team.
You'll get to see a few guys that are good. By the time you get to the second half, you're going to be watching a bunch of guys that probably aren't even going to be in training camp or on the practice squad. And that's just kind of the way it's going to go for the first couple of preseason games. The third one might give you a little bit different look, but that one's on the road. And so we'll see how it goes. If you are a hardcore depth fan, you're going to enjoy
love Fridays.
Yeah. Exactly. You'll like the preseason a lot. If you're looking for them to win, it's something to get yourself worked up. Yeah. We'll see how it goes.
I'm blindsiding you with this question. Is there anybody interesting on the Giants? We got to keep our,
Not really.
And that's more like local guys that you may remember. I'm not like,
well, Khalil Pimpleton is on the Giants, and he's on the bubble, and so, but I think we kind of know what Khalil is, right? Like, he's cool. He's fun. He's a little, like, you know, gadgety type player. But we saw last year, Khalif is way ahead of him when it comes to, like, you know, what he can do, and so I don't really see Pimpleton being a guy that comes back. I know they have, like, some offensive tackle depth. And so are guys
interested in that.
I mean, Pert. Yeah. Just but you. I mean, like,
and me a little bit,
but like, tackle. Yeah. If they need a tackle, like, that's, you know, they'll get a good look at a couple of depth guys that maybe could compete. So I don't know. Not anybody that jumps out at me as a guy I think that, like, might get cut that they're gonna, like, absolutely want to go after.
All right, so that's it. No movement, obviously, on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. No surprise there. We haven't been on in a month, so I don't see anybody rating our show. Man, these guys have been great the last 4 months. Last four weeks. Haven't heard a word about them.
Well, but look, we're back in the swing now, right?
This is like, it.
So
it'd be weekly now.
Yeah, the preseason is going to be kind of like this, but it's not long before we're going to be previewing the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, no, we're under a month away. So
there's a lot
of reason to be excited.
Very much.
All right, so that's it. That's all we got. Do you have any parting thoughts?
No. Be excited, but also keep your expectations in check for preseason.
If you see Eric on Friday, say hello to him.
See me at camp. That's fun too. We've met a couple of nice people at camp that have been awfully kind and wanted pictures and whatnot. It's been great.
All right. So that's all we got for this week. So until next time, let's go Lions.